Stage 4. Continuous attention and overcoming gross distraction and strong dullness. 4. The goal for Stage 4 is to overcome gross distraction and strong dullness. Set and hold the intention to be vigilant so that introspective awareness becomes continuous, and notice and immediately correct for strong dullness and gross distraction. Eventually, noticing and correcting become completely automatic. Practice goals for Stage 4. You begin this stage with a clear sense that your attention is much more stable and continuous, and compared to previous stages, it certainly is. However, your attention still alternates, shifting almost imperceptibly fast to a sound, thought, or feeling, then returning to the breath. The meditation object always remains in attention, but not exclusively. The primary goal at this stage is to overcome the scattering of attention caused by gross distraction and strong dullness. To accomplish this, you need to develop continuous introspective awareness, allowing you to detect these problems, correct them, and return your full attention to the meditation object. While you want to completely overcome the coarser forms of distraction and dullness, you will learn to tolerate and even make use of subtle distractions and subtle dullness. They will help you navigate another important challenge of this stage, learning to identify and sustain a balance between an over-energized, easily distracted mind and a dull, lethargic mind. As your mind grows calmer and more stable in this stage, you will experience a deep purification. Stored unconscious residues from the past well up to the surface and are released. The result is a profound healing. You don't have to do anything to help things along. This purification is a natural process of the mind. Simply allow it to unfold organically. Review of gross and subtle distraction. By now, you have grown quite familiar with the inner landscape of the mind and are accustomed to how it constantly shifts and changes. Physical sensations, thoughts, memories, and emotions continue to arise and pass away in your peripheral awareness. As attention alternates rapidly between the meditation object and these other stimuli, it makes them stand out from the background, so they are more prominent than other objects in peripheral awareness. As long as the meditation object remains your primary focus, they are only subtle distractions. But often, one of these competing objects can become your primary focus. When this happens, the sensations of the breath seem to fade. They continue as an object of alternating attention, but are perceived much less clearly. This is gross distraction, the first major obstacle to overcome in this stage. Occasionally, when a particularly strong distraction becomes the center of attention, the breath will slip completely into the background to become an object in peripheral awareness. Strictly speaking, the breath is no longer an object of attention when this happens. But as long as it has not disappeared entirely from consciousness, it is different from the forgetting characteristic of Stage 3. Learning to overcome gross distraction. There is a common misconception that stilling the mind means getting rid of thoughts and blocking out all distractions. Often students try to suppress these by focusing more intensely on the meditation object. This may seem like a reasonable strategy, yet brute force never works for long in meditation. You simply can't force the mind to do something it doesn't want to do. Also, since you have increased your mindfulness throughout the preceding stages, you are more conscious than ever of all the background mental activity, which also makes suppression impossible. Not only will suppressing distractions prove unsuccessful, trying to force exclusive attention on the breath would actually be a big mistake at this stage. Hyper-focused tunnel vision directed at something out there, in this case, the sensations of the breath, is exactly the kind of attention that accompanies the fight-or-flight response. This type of focus is usually accompanied by feelings of tension and anxiety, which would make your meditations agitating, frustrating, and difficult. Also, you may completely lose peripheral awareness, making you even more vulnerable to distractions and dullness. The lesson is, don't try to strong-arm your mind into a state of calm. Relax. Let it happen on its own. At this point in your practice, stilling the mind means reducing the constant movement of attention between the breath and gross distractions. The key to doing this is directing and sustaining attention. However, to succeed, you'll also need strong peripheral awareness so you can notice potential distractions before they actually capture your attention. For example, when you're carrying a full cup of hot tea through a crowded room, you want to sustain your attention on the cup while remaining aware of everything else around you. That way you can avoid a collision. Similarly, keep your primary focus on the breath and simply allow all other sensations and mental events in your peripheral awareness to just be there. Let them come. Let them be. Let them go. There are two steps to learning to overcome gross distractions. The first involves dealing with gross distraction that is already present. Simply continue the practice you learned in stage 3 to prevent forgetting. Recognize when a gross distraction is present, let go of it, and re-engage with the breath. The second step is a refinement of the first that prevents gross distraction from occurring in the first place. Recognize when a subtle distraction has the potential to become a gross distraction before it happens. Then tighten up your focus on the breath so the subtle distraction doesn't draw you away. Finally, engage with the breath more completely to keep it and all other distractions at bay. In both steps, you use introspective awareness to detect distractions. Then you work with directed attention to make the breath your primary focus, and with sustained attention to keep it the primary focus of attention. Let's take a closer look at this process. Cultivating continuous introspective awareness. The role of introspective awareness in these early stages is to help you catch problems so you can apply the appropriate antidote. As you progress, you constantly refine your introspective awareness to recognize increasingly subtle problems. In stage 2, you relied on spontaneous introspective awareness to recognize mind wandering. You positively reinforced this aha moment, then gently returned to the breath. In stage 3, you intentionally used introspective attention by checking in to look for gross distraction and take corrective action before forgetting happened. Using attention this way also trained and strengthened introspective awareness. In stage 4, you will develop continuous introspective awareness to observe and evaluate all distractions. But there are two drawbacks with using introspective attention to monitor the mind. The first I mentioned in stage 3. When checking in, you have to disrupt your focus on the breath. That worked then, but it doesn't now, since you're trying to cultivate continuous attention. The other problem concerns what attention sees when turned inward. The object of your introspective attention actually comes from the contents of introspective awareness in the previous moment. Introspective attention can only produce a conceptual snapshot of what was just happening, a kind of delay or echo, whereas introspective awareness is capable of continuously monitoring the mind. This is a rather subtle point. Take some time to think about it, since it has important consequences. Your new goal is to monitor the mind and detect distractions more efficiently, so that you don't interrupt attention. You achieve this by developing an intentional, vigilant, and continuous introspective awareness that alerts you to gross distractions while you remain focused on the breath. In other words, you want your attention to the breath to be a stable anchor as you keep watch over the entire ocean of the mind with introspective awareness. What does this vigilant introspective awareness feel like? Well, you're already somewhat familiar with it. In stage three, when you return to the breath after a moment of introspective attention, you may have noticed that the quality of your awareness seemed sharper and clearer for a while. During that time, introspective awareness and attention were more balanced. If you didn't notice, try it now. Take a minute to focus on your breath and stabilize your attention. Then, introspectively, check in on the state of your mind. After a moment, return your attention to the breath. Notice how introspective awareness continues while attention remains on the breath. This is precisely the kind of introspective awareness you need to make stronger and extend until it's always there. Cultivating introspective awareness requires a shift of emphasis. Up to now, you have worked to keep a balance between attention focused on the breath and peripheral awareness of everything else, primarily everything in extrospective awareness. However, now that you have established this balance, you want to start emphasizing the introspective part of peripheral awareness. It's like standing back a bit from the meditation object, just enough to keep the breath at the center of your attention while you take in everything else happening in the mind. You want to strengthen introspective awareness, making it continuous, like a vigilant sentry who alerts you that gross distraction is present or could potentially arise. As you look beyond the meditation object, don't just look at the content of peripheral awareness. Become aware of the activities of the mind itself, movements of attention, the way thoughts, feelings, and other mental objects arise and pass away in peripheral awareness, and any changes in the clarity or vividness of perception. By using the breath as an anchor, while you mindfully observe the mind, you're watching the mind while the mind watches the breath. This is metacognitive introspective awareness, and will come to full fruition by stage 8. Learning to sustain introspective awareness is extremely important for accomplishing the overall goals of meditation. It doesn't just make attention more stable. You could do that by simply bringing your attention back to the breath over and over. Rather, by anchoring your attention on the breath while maintaining introspective awareness, what you're doing is cultivating mindfulness. Mindfully observing mental processes also provides a more efficient, useful, and satisfying way to achieve stable attention. It's more efficient because you gain a better understanding of how the mind behaves, and therefore you can work more effectively. It's more useful because you will need this type of introspective awareness for the practices in the upcoming stages. And finally, it's more satisfying because your time isn't spent just plugging away, hoping for some future achievement. Instead, you're constantly engaged in a fascinating and transformative learning process. Directing and redirecting attention. Whenever you find your mind drawn into gross distraction, just let go and return to the breath. Do this in a gentle, unhurried, and even loving way. Maybe take a moment to appreciate the part of your mind that realizes you have wandered off track. Our natural tendency is to abruptly yank ourselves back to the breath. However, that will actually slow you down in the long run, so let go gently and easily instead. Any annoyance or self-judgment you may feel is just something you have to let go of. By affirming your successes, you will make quicker progress. A happy mind is a more focused mind. Don't worry if a gross distraction persists as a subtle distraction once you have returned to the breath. By just letting it be, it will usually dissipate on its own. Yet letting go and redirecting attention are only the first steps to completely overcoming gross distractions. You must also learn to tighten up your focus on the meditation object before a subtle distraction becomes a gross distraction. However, not all subtle distractions pose the same challenge to stable attention. There are two types that are especially troublesome, so you should learn to recognize them. First are the noticeably attractive subtle distractions. These draw your attention away because they hold some special allure or interest. For instance, you may be hungry and find yourself thinking about your next meal, or you may have a problem at work that keeps nagging at you. The second type of distraction doesn't exert the same kind of pull. Instead, your distraction ends up being diverted because of the manner in which the distraction arises. It sneaks in gradually, eventually displacing your focus. Once again, you need to rely on vigilant and continuous introspective awareness to distinguish these more troublesome, subtle distractions from the rest. When you notice them, you can ward them off by sharpening up your attention to the breath. Persistent distractions, pain, insights, and emotions. Sometimes a strong and persistent distraction just won't allow you to let it come, let it be, and let it go. At this stage, there are three kinds of subtle distractions that often become persistent, gross distractions: pain and physical discomfort, interesting, attractive, and seemingly important insights, and emotionally charged memories, thoughts, and visionary experiences. Having to grapple with these overwhelmingly powerful distractions can undo all the satisfaction you felt at finally being able to pay continuous attention to the breath. You may feel impatient or skeptical about the benefits of meditation or your ability to practice. However, you don't need to worry or judge yourself. At this stage, the arising of strong and persistent distractions is actually a sign of progress. You're coming into contact with primal drives, untapped capacities, hidden archetypes, and powerful emotions arising from deeper parts of the mind. Just remember that whether you're dealing with pain, brilliant insights, or powerful emotions, the goal is always the same: to overcome distractions with the right antidote, re-engage with the breath until attention becomes stable, and cultivate ever stronger introspective awareness. Let's examine these powerful distractions and the methods for dealing with them. Pain and discomfort as a distraction. Every meditator must learn to deal with pain, numbness, itching, and other potentially distracting sensations. In this stage, they become much more noticeable. During stage 3, you experienced pain and discomfort because you weren't used to sitting still for long periods. Now, pain becomes a way for the mind to resist practicing. Your mind will tend to magnify ordinary discomforts. It will even create painful sensations that have no physical cause, especially during longer sits or meditation retreats. Such pain often disappears once you make it the focus of your attention, only to show up elsewhere a little later. Regardless of its source, pain must now be confronted as part of your practice. Of course, you don't have to seek out pain, and don't suppress or ignore pain that has a definite physical origin. If you suspect your pain may be due to injury or disease but aren't sure, it's best to consult a physician. You wouldn't want your sitting posture to exacerbate any already existing condition, like an arthritic knee or a twisted ankle. You should make yourself as comfortable as possible to keep the body from interfering with training the mind. Use pillows, pads, or anything else to compensate for sensitive areas. Just remember that even with these adjustments, you will still experience unpleasant sensations. You've already learned the basic strategy for dealing with pain. Ignore unpleasant sensations as long as possible, make them your meditation object if they persist, and move mindfully only when absolutely necessary. However, at this stage, you must examine the pain even more thoroughly and wait even longer before moving. Pain is a dynamic sensation with many subtle qualities. Investigate them. Notice if it is sharp, piercing, burning, aching, dull, etc. Notice if the sensation feels solid and unchanging, or if it fluctuates in intensity, area, or location. Investigate whether your pain is one sensation or a composite of several. Search within the sensation for the source of the unpleasantness. How much of the pain you're experiencing is inherent in the sensation, and how much is your mind's reaction to the sensation? This kind of in-depth exploration will help you become as objective as possible when dealing with pain. At first, focusing on pain may only seem to intensify it. Yet after sustained investigation, pain often resolves itself. It does so in three ways. Its intensity may fade entirely. It may continue as a strong sensation, but no longer feels particularly painful. Or it may stay painful, but can be effectively disregarded. The reason pain dissipates is because you have stopped resisting and started to accept its presence. Meditation teacher Shinzen Young puts this into a mathematical formula. The amount of suffering, S, you experience, is equal to the actual pain, P, times the mind's resistance, R, to the pain. So S equals P times R. If you stop resisting completely, then R equals zero. Pain multiplied by zero equals zero. The suffering you are experiencing totally dissolves. But if you expect this to happen every time, it won't. This is because the expectation that your pain will disappear leads you back toward resistance and non-acceptance. When pain disappears completely, or continues in a form you can ignore, always return to the sensations of the breath. Repeat the entire process as necessary. Sometimes painful sensations just don't go away. When this happens, stay with the pain as your meditation object. Don't be discouraged. You can train the mind just as effectively using pain as you can with the sensations of the breath. In fact, there are certain advantages to using pain. Because it draws your attention so intensely, you're less likely to experience dullness and distraction. Also, because pain generates many thoughts and emotions, it is easier to maintain strong introspective awareness. In other words, pain is quite useful for developing stable attention and powerful mindfulness. Make good use of it. Unavoidable physical discomfort is also an opportunity to discover the true nature of pain. You will eventually learn to distinguish between physical discomfort as a sensation and the mind's unnecessary reaction to it, which is suffering. In the words of the Buddha, when the uninstructed worldling experiences a painful feeling, he feels two things, a bodily one and a mental one. When the instructed noble disciple experiences a painful feeling, he feels one thing, a bodily one, and not a mental one. Pain disappears completely in the later stages. The problem of discursive brilliance. Seemingly brilliant insights are a much more pleasant kind of gross distraction. For instance, you may find new ways of dealing with personal problems, or you may gain insights into your mind and behavior, or into profound philosophical and metaphysical concepts. These insights can emerge unbidden from the unconscious, appearing in peripheral awareness, and tempting you to take notice. Other times, they suddenly spring onto center stage. These insights are often quite valid and very useful, which is what makes them so seductive as potential distractions. Why do they arise now, at this stage? By this time, your attention has grown more stable and your mindfulness more powerful. Therefore, your mind is better able to create and link novel ideas together and can better appreciate the significance of those ideas. If you choose to pursue thinking about them, keeping your breath in peripheral awareness, you will be pleasantly surprised by how much your powers of discursive thinking have improved. In fact, your focus will be stronger than ever. You will feel excited and satisfied when you reflect on some brilliant conclusion. But then it becomes difficult to return to the breath, which usually leads you to look for something else to think about, or to get up from the cushion altogether. You may also decide that your newly discovered powers of analysis are the real benefit of meditation. If you keep engaging with these insights and thinking them through, then whenever you sit to meditate, compelling issues will arise. You will have trained your mind to make meditation into a kind of personal psychotherapy or a tool for intellectual or artistic creativity. This quickly becomes an entertaining alternative to the sometimes tedious business of training the mind. Your initial insights may indeed be significant, but as your mind continues to dredge up material, their quality will decline. They may seem profound during meditation, but if you examine them afterward, they often appear trivial. In this way, they are a lot like the brilliant ideas that sometimes happen under the influence of recreational drugs. Whether they are significant or trivial, the point is the same. Discursive brilliance quickly becomes a trap, drawing you away from the practice again and again. Overcoming this obstacle is easy. Just avoid falling into the trap. If you have meaningful insights, make a mental note of them and resolve to address them after meditating. Return your focus to the breath. It also helps if you resolve to set aside a time specifically for analytical meditation. Done as a distinct form of practice and on a separate occasion, analytical meditation on the bright ideas and insights that come up is extremely useful. Sometimes a powerful thought keeps returning. When this happens, acknowledge and accept it, then make it your temporary meditation object. However, don't analyze its content. Instead, apply a label to the thought. For example, thinking, or thought arising. This will help you keep an objective distance. Hold the thought in attention until its intensity subsides. This might take a few minutes and need to be repeated several times during the meditation. Once the intensity subsides, return to the breath. You can use this approach in other situations too. In general, whenever you can't disregard a powerful distraction, finesse the situation by intentionally making it your new meditation object. Emotions, memories, and visions as distractions. As the mind grows calm and everyday distractions fall away, significant material from the unconscious starts to well up into consciousness. This is a very significant event in the progress of your practice. However, this powerful material doesn't always surface right away, but may instead be preceded by strong feelings of restlessness and impatience. They're like the tip of an iceberg, indicating that much more lies just below the surface. So, if you experience restlessness, don't suppress it. Accept it openly, inviting whatever lies below to come up. If restlessness and impatience persists and are too strong to disregard, you will need to use the technique described later for dealing with other strong emotions. When this material does become conscious, it can take two forms. It may appear as memories, thoughts, or visions, accompanied by strong and often difficult emotions, or it can manifest as just the raw emotions themselves, fear, sadness, anger, etc., unaccompanied by any mental object. Because they are unaccompanied, it may seem like these naked emotions have no cause. In this way, they are similar to the nonspecific or free-floating anxiety for which people seek therapy. Yet this is all perfectly normal in meditation. In fact, as we'll explain, it's another sign you're making progress. This disruptive material comes from past emotional and psychological challenges, and the more of these you've faced, the more you'll encounter. Some may be quite traumatic, such as sexual abuse, the loss of a parent, or childhood bullying. But major challenges aren't the only cause. Lesser trials that easily go unrecognized, like teasing, parental favoritism, or the pains of adolescence, play their part as well. Charged, unconscious material will also arise if you've internalized dysfunctional or conflicting belief systems. For example, you may believe in sexual liberation, but still experience inner conflict because of the sexual mores you were taught as a child. Or, you may have a deeply internalized work ethic that makes you feel guilty when you meditate because you think you aren't being productive. In some cases, you'll be quite clear about what created the strong thoughts or emotions, especially if the cause was traumatic. but you may be unaware of the more commonplace and subtle traumas that reinforced this charged material. However, in many instances, these strange thoughts or distressing images may seem to have little or nothing to do with you or with anything you've ever experienced. Yet remember, nothing in meditation is ever random or meaningless. You may not know where some painful emotion or vision came from, but no matter how bizarre or unpleasant it may seem, you can be sure that something in your history caused it. For instance, you may have picked up or embellished a violent image from a movie that you've long forgotten. Whether you know the cause or not isn't important. You can be sure that everything arising during meditation forms part of your psychic makeup. None of it is unimportant or beside the point. Images arise because they symbolize material your mind isn't comfortable confronting more directly. Learn to fully embrace everything that surfaces. They are hidden parts of your psyche. More importantly, understand and rejoice in the fact that when this material comes to the surface, it's an act of purification and a critical step toward developing shamatha. In the stillness of meditation, the magic of mindfulness integrates this difficult content buried in the unconscious in a healthy and healing way. The strategy for dealing with emotions, thoughts, or images is simply to ignore them for as long as you can. Then, just like with pain, when something becomes too strong to disregard, make it your meditation object. Don't resist, avoid, or reject this potent material. It will only go back into the unconscious and resurface again later. Acknowledging, allowing, and accepting are the antidotes to avoiding, resisting, and rejecting. Acknowledge the validity of whatever comes up, even if you don't know its origin. Allow it to be there without analyzing or judging it, while you keep cultivating the standpoint of an objective observer. Last, accept it as a manifestation of some hidden part of yourself. It's important not to get bogged down in examining the content of unconscious material. That's time-consuming and can interrupt your progress. How do you learn to handle this charged material objectively without getting caught up in it? First, maintain a strong, clear awareness of where you are and what you're doing, that in this present moment you're safe, secure, and sitting comfortably in meditation. Then isolate the emotional aspect of the experience. If you're having unpleasant memories, for instance, deal first with the emotions that accompany them. Only then will you be able to view those memories objectively and dispassionately enough to accept the past events they depict and let the memories go. In the same way, if you're dealing with disturbing projections from your imagination, you must confront their emotional component before you can accept and let go of the images. And, of course, you have to directly address those raw emotions that sometimes arise with no apparent cause. In every case, address the emotions first. You want to create some objective distance from these unpleasant emotions. Verbalizations are important for this. If you have the thought, "I am angry," replace it with the thought, "Anger is arising." This kind of rephrasing isn't just useful to avoid getting tangled up in emotions. It's simply more accurate. You're not these feelings. There is no self in emotions. Remember that, like everything else, emotions arise due to specific causes and conditions and pass away when their causes disappear. Do your best to dissociate from these emotions, keeping the role of an objective observer, even though that can be challenging. Dissociating doesn't mean you don't feel the emotions fully, or that you try to pour cold water on them. It means you let the emotions come into consciousness and do their dance, without getting absorbed in them. When confronting emotions, always start by investigating the physical sensations that accompany them. As with pain, this is the most effective way of staying objective. Every emotion has its own characteristic sensations and related bodily movements. Scan your own body to discover these for yourself. What are the specific bodily sensations that go with this particular emotion? Where are they located? Are they pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? Are they changing intensity? Are they expanding and contracting, or solid and fixed? Do they change in quality, or stay the same? Only when you're ready, turn your attention from the physical to the mental aspects of the emotion. Without getting caught up in your subjective experience, try to find a label that accurately describes the emotion. For example, anxiety, guilt, lust, and quality. For example, intense, vague, agitating. Notice what kinds of thoughts the emotion triggers. Is the emotion getting more or less intense, or staying fairly constant? Perhaps the emotion is transforming. For example, anxiety can morph into fear, and fear into anger, and anger into guilt. Again, it's helpful to use verbal labels such as anxiety is arising to remain objective. As you might have guessed, this process can be very tiring. If necessary, take a break from meditation and rest, or do something else. As long as you stay objective and don't identify with the emotion, you won't suffer in the process. If you do find yourself suffering, physically or emotionally, you can be sure that you're identifying with some unpleasant emotion. Try to see if you can spot where it's happening. The mind works in subtle ways. You can stay objective toward one emotion while at the same time identifying with another. For instance, when you investigate anger, there may be an undercurrent of fear. Without realizing it, you may remain objective toward the anger but identify with the fear. Practicing introspective awareness will help you handle these subtler, more hidden kinds of emotional identification. While keeping your attention focused on the primary emotion, use introspective awareness to find the background emotion that you're identifying with. Then make the background emotion the new object of attention. Once you have gained some objectivity toward that emotion, the suffering will go away. No matter the emotion, your goal is always the same. Acknowledge, allow, and accept. As meditation teacher Joseph Goldstein says, it's not what we are feeling that's important, but how we relate to it that matters. Let the emotion just be until it goes away. Sometimes it will simply disappear. Other times it will remain, but become less intense. When this happens, unless there are associated memories or images that have not yet faded, it's time to return to the meditation object as the primary focus. If you find there are associated memories or images that have not yet faded, simply observe them without engaging or judging them. They may have been present while you were focusing on the emotion, or they may have appeared after the emotion started to subside. Either way, acknowledge their presence and accept them with equanimity. Then, when it's easy to do, return your attention to the breath. The thoughts or images may disappear at once, or remain for a while as subtle distractions. Just keep the breath at the center of your attention. If the emotional intensity associated with these mental objects comes back, repeat the process as many times as needed until the disturbance goes away completely. Handling emotionally charged materials isn't always easy. They can persist for a surprisingly long time. But don't be concerned if at first you don't succeed. You will have many more opportunities. The material will continue to return until you can greet it with full acceptance and equanimity. No matter how many times it resurfaces, acknowledge, allow, and accept it. Once this material finally goes away on its own, it will no longer disturb your meditations. Not only that, it will also stop affecting your daily life in negative ways. In summary, when the mind is quieted through meditation, charged emotions, thoughts, and visions well up from the unconscious into consciousness. There they become gross distractions. To overcome them, simply make them the object of your attention, acknowledging and accepting them until they fade away on their own. That's it. It's not important to consider why you're having these thoughts or where they come from. That kind of discursive analysis takes you away from the real work of meditation. In fact, there's no need to do anything at all. Whenever you judge, instead of just observing, mindfulness is less effective. By simply allowing material from the unconscious to come up, by mindfully bearing witness and not reacting, you reprogram the mind more deeply than you ever could through intellectual analysis. You're purifying your mind of all the afflictions you've accumulated throughout your entire life. This process is essential for personal growth and spiritual development in general, and for the final stages of this practice in particular. When purification occurs, welcome it, because only by working through our problems can we finally be free of them. Purification of the mind. The emotional purification in stage 4 can be the equivalent of years of therapy and is crucial for progressing through the 10 stages. When we can observe and accept the thoughts, emotions, and images driving unconscious programming, the illuminating power of mindfulness works its magic. Deep, unconscious processes are informed that the circumstances responsible for our conditioning no longer exist, and that the emotional reactions produced are no longer useful. We're not even the same person anymore. This new information reprograms those unconscious processes at a deep level, and the very structure of our personality is transformed and purified. We become less susceptible to destructive emotions and are better able to appreciate and cultivate more skillful qualities of mind. It's not uncommon for meditation to bring up things that might otherwise have stayed repressed for our whole life. The best thing you could ever do for yourself is to confront and work through this material. However, some people have so much trouble with this emotionally charged material that the instructions given here don't work for them. If you're acutely disturbed by what comes up, do whatever you can to ground yourself. Take your mind off things through companionship, good food, exercise, or try watching a movie. Having someone to talk to can be very helpful, provided they know how to be a good listener. However, never listen to anyone's advice unless it comes from a meditation teacher with experience in these purifications or a professionally trained counselor. If anyone else starts offering you advice, thank them for their help and gracefully change the subject. If you find you're consistently overwhelmed by the intensity of what comes up in this practice, switch to the loving-kindness meditation. Practice loving-kindness until you can easily generate strong feelings of compassion for yourself and others. Then try resuming stage 4 practice. If you find the material is still too intense to deal with on your own, seek professional help. Sustaining attention by engaging with the meditation object. Now let's look at how to sustain attention on the breath after having dealt with the kind of powerful, gross distractions we've just discussed. Whenever you return to the breath, you should intensify your focus, but not too much, just enough to keep any other subtle distractions from becoming gross distractions. Intensifying your focus helps keep distractions at bay. When you ignore them for a while, they will fade from awareness. To help you intensify your focus, use the practices of following and connecting, described in Stage 3. In Stage 4, connecting is particularly useful. You observe changes in the breath over time and notice, or connect, how those changes correspond to shifts in your state of mind. Don't focus on the breath too intensely for too long at this stage. If you attempt exclusive, single-pointed attention before you have enough training, you lose introspective awareness, becoming vulnerable to distractions and dullness. Make your attention more intense, but in as relaxed and gentle a way as possible. It helps to aim for a balance between attention and introspective awareness. It's like holding a robin's egg, firmly, so you don't drop it, but also gently, so you don't break it. Learning to overcome strong dullness. As you become more skilled at dealing with distractions, strong dullness will become your next major obstacle. We gave you some tools in Stage 3 for working with the drowsiness caused by strong dullness. In this stage, your goal is to overcome strong dullness entirely. Dullness occurs when we turn the mind inward, which reduces the constant flow of thoughts and sensations that usually keep the mind energized and alert. Therefore, the overall energy level of the mind drops. With less stimulation, the brain winds down toward sleep, and the mind grows dull. This normally happens when we're fatigued or at bedtime. In meditation, it's not just turning inward that decreases mental energy, but when we focus on the breath too intensely and for too long, we are also excluding the thoughts and sensations that usually keep the mind alert. This is another reason why looking beyond the meditation object with peripheral awareness is so important. When we stay aware of things in the background, we continue to stimulate brain activity and won't sink into dullness. Overcoming strong dullness. To deal effectively with strong dullness, we need to distinguish between two different kinds of subtle dullness: progressive subtle dullness and stable subtle dullness. As the name implies, progressive subtle dullness eventually leads to strong dullness, and the longer it's present, the more likely strong dullness will arise. Therefore, you'll have to learn to recognize progressive subtle dullness in order to overcome strong dullness. On the other hand, stable subtle dullness doesn't lead to strong dullness. In this stage, tolerating stable subtle dullness keeps the mind from becoming agitated and restless. You'll lose some vividness, clarity, and intensity of perception, but will have a more peaceful and stable state of mind, with fewer distractions. Only in Stage 5 will you work to overcome all forms of subtle dullness. There are three simple steps for defeating strong dullness. The first step is to recognize its presence and rouse your mind out of it using an appropriate antidote. This can be a challenge. When the dullness is deep enough to the point that you're drowsy, you will have no introspective awareness to alert you to the problem. You only realize there's dullness after you find yourself nodding off, snoring, or dreaming. If this happens, try to wake yourself up completely. And if it's only progressive subtle dullness you're experiencing, rouse yourself from that as well. With either type of dullness, you must first re-energize the mind. Once you've done that, the second step is to rely on introspective awareness to notice when dullness returns, before it grows too strong. When it returns, apply the appropriate antidote once more. The sooner you notice progressive subtle dullness, the easier it is to counteract. The third step of the process is to repeat steps 1 and 2 until the dullness doesn't come back at all. Because subtle dullness impairs your introspective awareness, you will often have trouble recognizing when dullness has returned, step 2. However, with time and practice, you will learn to identify and correct for progressive subtle dullness before it grows too strong. Also, as you learn to recognize the onset more quickly, the antidotes you use won't have to be as strong, and they'll prove more effective. When noticing and correcting becomes automatic, you'll have completely overcome strong dullness. A well-trained mind won't slip into strong dullness, except when extremely fatigued. Eventually, even progressive subtle dullness will rarely occur. You will still experience stable subtle dullness until you overcome it in Stage 5. 3 steps for overcoming strong dullness. 1. Apply a strong enough antidote to completely awaken the mind whenever strong dullness or progressive subtle dullness is present. 2. Use introspective awareness to recognize the return of dullness as soon as possible, before subtle dullness becomes strong dullness, so you can apply the appropriate antidote. 3. Repeat this process until the dullness doesn't return. The antidotes for dullness. When you're experiencing strong dullness, use the antidotes described in stage 3 to rouse yourself. For instance, take a few deep breaths and exhale forcibly through your mouth, creating resistance by pursing your lips. Or try clenching all your muscles, holding them for a few seconds, and suddenly release and relax. Repeat this several times. Another helpful method is to suck in your gut while tightening and releasing the perineum. These are all invigorating and work well if the dullness isn't too strong. For very strong dullness, try walking meditation for a few minutes or meditate while standing. Standing meditation can be tiring and uncomfortable, but it's quite effective and sometimes necessary. If nothing else works, get up and splash some cold water on your face, then go back to practicing. When the dullness isn't as strong, just expanding your peripheral awareness can sometimes be enough. Enlarge the area of your awareness to encompass all bodily sensations, sounds, smells, and so forth, while keeping your attention on the breath. You can also shift attention away from the breath, making your whole body and environment the meditation object for a while. You can also try meditating with your eyes open. If progressive subtle dullness is caught soon enough, any of these techniques can help you overcome it. If you recognize the presence of progressive subtle dullness early enough, you can raise the energy in the mind just by strengthening your intention to observe the sensations of the breath clearly and in more detail. However, this will only work for very subtle dullness, identified very early on. And remember, if you make your attention too intense for too long, mindfulness will fade. Also, focusing too intensely can make you overly energized and agitated. If this happens, relax the force of your attention to allow a little subtle dullness in, decreasing the energy level of the mind. The key to using close attention is to strike a balance. You don't want your focus to be too intense and tight, nor too relaxed and loose. When dullness doesn't return for at least 3 to 5 minutes, you can be confident that the antidote was strong enough and that you've lifted yourself out fully. Whenever dullness returns sooner, your antidote wasn't strong enough or applied for long enough. If it returns almost immediately, you're in a state called sinking. You're sinking into dullness so quickly that your efforts to escape aren't enough. This means you need a much stronger antidote. The basic rule is, do whatever's necessary to re-energize the mind to a state of full alertness. During this stage, dullness will often return, no matter how strongly you rouse yourself. So always be vigilant. Don't be surprised or disappointed when it returns. Just keep practicing. And be encouraged. The sooner you catch dullness, the more easily you can rouse the mind, and the closer you are to overcoming strong dullness completely. Be prepared to spend entire sessions working with dullness. Welcome it as an opportunity to investigate the nature of dullness. At some point during your sit, usually after many interventions, dullness may even disappear entirely. When this happens, you'll notice your mind feels light and alert. And with experience, you'll be able to recognize when all traces of dullness have disappeared completely. You have achieved the goal for this stage when progressive, subtle dullness rarely arises, and when it does, is quickly noticed and corrected for. The seduction of dullness. Strong dullness can be a seductive trap. States of dullness lead to dream imagery, archetypal visions, pleasurable sensations, paranormal experiences like channeling, past life recollections, and the overall feeling that something profound is occurring. If you anchor attention on the breath, you can sustain them for a long time without falling asleep. In certain traditions, these states are purposely cultivated. However, when it comes to cultivating attention and awareness, these states are only a hindrance. Remember that visionary experiences, brilliant insights, and any other seemingly profound encounters should all be avoided at this stage. When these experiences arise, simply resolve to let go of them. Strengthen your intention to observe the details of the breath as clearly and vividly as possible. Ignore the visions. Bring yourself out of dullness, and carry on meditating. This may not be easy if in another system of practice you've used such experiences and found meaning and value in them. If you find some significance in a vision that arises, set it aside and explore it at another time. Conclusion. You have mastered stage 4 when you're free from both gross distractions and strong dullness. Physical sensations, thoughts, memories, and emotions still arise, but they no longer draw attention away. Dullness no longer leads to drowsiness, nor causes perception of the breath sensations to grow dim or take on hypnagogic distortions. By the end of stage 4, you can direct and sustain your attention at will. This is a unique and powerful ability. The strength of your mindfulness has also reached an important threshold. Attention can precisely examine every part of the breath with little effort. Your perception of the meditation object has become nonverbal and non-discursive. Also, awareness has grown more powerful and can clearly discern how the breath changes over time. With such strong attention and clear awareness, the words of the Buddha take on new significance. Breathing in a long breath, he knows he breathes in a long breath. Breathing out a long breath, he knows he breathes out a long breath. Breathing in a short breath, he knows he breathes in a short breath. Breathing out a short breath, he knows he breathes out a short breath. Anapanasati Sutta.